you know, you look at guys on the tour now that they're going to the gym before a round, which to me is the worst thing possible. Like, you're breaking down muscles before you want to maximize their strength. Typically, most injuries that happen on a golf course actually happen before. And once a nerve is hit or your spinal cord is hit with any of the structures we just discussed, is it's a, like a temporary paralyzation. Your body goes into a fight or flight. It's trying to protect it. The lumbar spine, which is lower back, is designed really to go primarily forward and back. It's not designed for rotation. Well, the golf swing is all about rotation. We're on a fulcrum.
There's a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Did you have Daly on here?
No, I wish. That was a cameo.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I had to pay John Daly to do that. Right. I've told the story a couple times, but for any new listeners out there that haven't heard it, you know, you put in a submission for a cameo, right? Like, you kind of give them a general sense of what you're looking for. Like, if somebody wants a, you know, birthday shout out to my mom or sure. Like, or whatever. So I do it for like Bruce Buffer. I do it for Bob Does Sports. And I do it for John Daly does it. And I tell him like, hey, just doing an intro for my podcast. I think it would be awesome if you said something about the Member Guest Podcast. And I just left it at that. Like, I like to leave it open and just whatever comes back, comes back. And it goes like a couple of weeks. And I don't hear anything. And then I wake up one morning at like 7 o'clock and I see a notification from Cameo and it's like 2:30 in the morning, John Daly has completed your cameo. And I'm like, oh, this should be good. 2:30. Dude, I'll show you the video after. He is loaded at 2:30 in the morning. Like, this is John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. And he like does it a couple times. It's hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
what did he charge you for it?
I can't. His was a pretty penny. His was a few hundred bucks, maybe like $500 for his. Okay. Bruce Buffer and Bob Does Sports were a little bit more affordable. Although Bob Does Sports is pretty popular on Cameo, he's a little bit more high ticket now. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
Robbie Berger, Bob Does Sports. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. So it sounds good. Turned out pretty good. And now our intro actually, like, people really like it.
It's legit.
Yeah. It's right a legit now. Intro. It sounds good. And John Daly's on there and a little thing of Bryson in there. And yeah, it's great. So. How are you doing? This will be your second time on the podcast now.
I'm a pro now. No, I'm fantastic. Thanks.
Yeah,
no,
things are going good.
Things are going really good.
Yeah. And it's going to be back-to-back episodes that your name pops up because Larry was on the last episode and he's like happy as a clam now that he can play golf and you fix him up too.
Yeah, fantastic. Love Larry. Everyone loves Larry.
Yeah, I think he called you Dr. Feelgood or something. So maybe that's what his wife calls you. I can't remember.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to go there.
Yeah, there's a fine line there, right? It was just awesome because he was here. And he's like, yeah, my wife's down at Dr. Hope and we're going to go get dinner in Excelsior and we're making like a night out of it. So,
right on.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It was great. For maybe new listeners or people who haven't heard your name yet, maybe a quick introduction would be awesome.
Sure, yeah. I'm Dr. Mark Hope. My practice is in Excelsior. Been there 27 years. Fantastic. Take care of everyone. Community, around, country, wherever.
Everywhere, yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, I think I got introduced to you because somebody had mentioned that you've worked with Rocco and just like a lot of golfers, and obviously I'm within the golf community now, and people said, because I, you know, tell people like I'm having these hip and back issues. They're like, dude, go see Dr. Hope. I'm like, all right, where is he? That was like the first question. They're like, oh, he's in Excelsior. And I was like, what? And I pulled it up. Dude, 0.1 miles from my house, if that, like, I can walk to see you guys. So it was a match made in heaven from the day we started.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to have you on because we've been just generally speaking, every time I come in, talking about, you know, how's the golf swing? You know, I've come a long way in probably the last, I don't know how long I've been seeing you guys now, close to 2 years, I want to say.
I would say, yeah.
Give or take. Yeah. And I had a lot of back issues, and this is like the first time I feel like I'm going into a season where my back and hips feel really, really healthy. But we also just want to talk about like this modern golf swing. And, you know, I sent you some stuff about golfers who have, you know, had back injuries, and we wanted to kind of deep dive into that. So if we just generally started maybe with somebody like myself, and then we'll talk about like a lot of the pros, but
sure,
generally talk about like the golfers that you have come in. What are the normal things that you see, right? Like if you just look at a golfer, right, you're probably going to see some pretty standard stuff within what's off, what needs to be fixed, right? Because the golf swing can generally be similar across golfers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can see when they lay on the table if they swing right-handed or left-handed. You know, you see overactive muscles of the lower back on the side of handedness. Due to them stacking that side or bending to that side of the ball when they rotate around it.
Okay.
So that's the number one thing I see in everybody. Varying degrees, depending upon how much load they put on their swing in that lateral bend, that lateral flexion stacking. You know, so that's a consistent thing. You know, I look at anyone's back, it's almost twice as high, if you will, hypertonic or tight on that side of the muscle involvement on the side of handedness of swinging the club.
And then also I'd say, generally speaking, most golfers would tell you like, oh, like they always hold that kind of the lower back.
Right.
Why is it the low back that, again, generally with the golf swing, the strain is put on there? Like, why is it the low back and not, you know, upper back or shoulders? And obviously that will happen for some people. But again, just generalizing, why is it lower back that people have issues with?
Yeah, I know, it's a great question. It's the anatomy. The lumbar spine, which is lower back, is designed really to go primarily forward and back. It's not designed for rotation. Well, the golf swing is all about rotation. We're on a fulcrum.
Yeah, and just to pause real quick, like as a visual, when you say forward and back, like if I'm standing hinging forward and going backwards.
Correct, like flexion.
Not turning left and turning right.
Correct.
Got it.
The majority of that turning left and right is coming from your hips and your pelvis and your mid-back and shoulders.
Okay.
So the challenge is creating enough mobility within that lower back that you're not forcing motion that already shouldn't be there, because then you have a loading disaster on that area of your spine. And so it's getting everything in sync, not only mechanically, but also with how your brain perceives each body part, every region working together at the same time. And that's where you see, you know, like we've talked about several times, this breaking down in modern golf swings, you know, because you don't have all areas talking to each other on the same level. And there's different strengths in each region, which then is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. So then for the, you know, call it the normal golfer that comes to see you, like, where are the areas that people do need to maybe spend more time and strengthen? Or is it more about more mobility? And I imagine you're going to say, yes, it's all the things. But like, what are the areas that, you know, generally for somebody listening, it's like, hey, you want to save your back and you need to figure out the golf swing. Like, here are the things that you need to focus on and strengthen more than not. Because I know for me, like a lot of it had to do with just like hip mobility. Like I had really tight hips and it felt like that's what was pulling on my lower back. And then it was getting things out of, you know, whack. And
exactly. So your hips were tight. They weren't moving like they should. Your pelvis and hips. So all that translation was going to your lower back, which is not designed to rotate. But in order to gain a golf swing and have that speed, you had to put that in that lower back. And that's why the lower back hurt. Now your hips and pelvis move perfectly, so you're not loading that lower back at all, because you're getting that turn from the hips. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I try to, like, you know, when I'm going through it in my mind, like my initial thought was, yeah, I have lower back pain. And like, I think I had some stuff with the discs going on as well that we had diagnosed, but ultimately a lot of it came down to better hip mobility. And I think people will think, oh, I need to strengthen my lower back or do something with the lower back. But it actually had a lot to do with my like glutes and hips, which, you know, are close to the lower back area, but actually it had more to do with that than it did strengthening like back muscles.
Correct.
Per se.
Because the hips and pelvis are designed to rotate. And so if you can gain that rotation there and not place all that force on the lower back that shouldn't rotate as much, then your back's going to be fantastic.
Sure.
You know? And so like the average golfer, amateur, you know, they just go out, hit the first tee, try and drive it right down the middle. No warm up, nothing. The issue is your lower back is not moving. Your hips aren't moving. Your pelvis aren't moving. Something's going to give, right? And so that's learning to gain independent movement in all those segments, like I talked about last year. They have to move all independently. Each joint has to move independently. And you'll, you know, we'll translate that to when you have surgery, right? If they don't move independently, something has to make up for that lack to gain that swing.
Sure.
And that's where the problems happen.
Yeah. So then like in that case, when we start talking about, you know, surgery or disc replacement, I would like to know, cause I don't know if I've ever like really taken a deep dive into this, but what happens like when you get an actual disc replacement? Like I think Tiger had an actual disc replacement surgery. I don't know. I have my list too. Maybe it was Zalatoris as well had like back surgery. What requires actual surgery? Like what's breaking down that's requiring that? And what are they actually doing when they go in there for surgery? Because there's, you know, things that you can obviously do on your own via physical therapy or chiropractic work or, you know, getting in the gym and doing things. And there ultimately comes a point that you've done something that requires surgery. And I'm trying to understand when you go past that point of like no return,
once
right?
Like, point, yeah.
Like what is that? Is something burst or break or what happens that requires it?
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, you look at the spine, which is comprised of vertebrae, which are bones. What separate those bones are the discs, which is a cartilage, you know, piece that has rings and a nucleus inside. Well, when the disc breaks down to a point that it blows out and you can't contain that in that space anymore, and it's either in your spinal cord itself or hitting the nerves consistently, that's when surgery is required to maintain function in your leg, your lower body, not even the golf swing, just to be able to walk. So that's when surgery becomes necessary. When you look at disc replacements, you know, you look at three things with surgery. There's where you go in and just cut something off and you don't add any parts. Well, that maintains most of your range of motion independently of those vertebrae, which is important, right? We want to maintain as much motion as we can, especially when we're talking about an athlete or golf. The second thing is disc replacement. Well, they take the cartilage all the way out and they put in a polymer or plastic in there or ceramic to keep that space in there. Well, you lose between 75 and 85% of that motion of that joint.
When you get surgery?
When you get a disc replacement.
When you get disc replacement.
And then when you fuse it, you lose 100% of that motion of those joints. Well, the challenge with any of those, obviously the first example being the least invasive, is once you lose intersegmental motion, two vertebrae move as a block instead of independently, all of that load goes above and below those segments.
Mm. So then you're having stuff above it work too hard and stuff below it work too hard.
And usually that doesn't end the problem. Fusion or disc replacement doesn't fix a problem. It changes the location of where the problem is now.
Got it. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Huh. So if we go to the point of like, okay, not getting surgery, I think everybody has felt, you know, what I felt for call it 12 to 16 months on and off, which was that kind of like shooting lower back pain that would sometimes like be really sharp. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going back, I haven't had this issue in a while, so we used to talk about it all the time. Had it in a long time, but when I did have it, I think you explained to me like there was always a called it like a pinched nerve, or one of my discs was maybe, you know, there was too much pressure on it all the time and things were maybe pulling in each direction, if that's what it was, and that's kind of what caused that sharp pain. Is that accurate?
That's somewhat accurate. It's either the disc, a soft tissue around the disc and or joint, or part of the bone itself hitting the nerve, and that creates that sharp pain. Like you're sticking your finger in a socket.
Yeah.
You get that electric sharp pain.
Because everybody, you know, this year remembers the, you know, Colin Morikawa, just like everybody saw that and went, I've had that.
Yeah.
Like I've seen that where like he literally gets to the first tee, takes like a practice swing. And then all of a sudden, like you can tell everything just locked up and he goes, I can't swing like this. And right. And then he comes back at the Masters, no more than a month later, I want to say, give or take, and like plays pretty well. And I think most golfers and probably athletes have experienced that, where one day you have something like scary like that happen and it's literally debilitating. And, you know, you take a little bit to recover and all of a sudden you feel fine. But mentally, like for me, it was always kind of scary knowing like I could show up to the golf course one day and it would take one swing and all of a sudden my back would just be, I could be done for like 2 to 3 weeks.
Right.
And so my question is like, what leads to that? And then how do you also prevent it? Because I don't show up to the golf course anymore thinking that.
Right.
I haven't swung a golf club in 6 months and felt like, man, the next one could mean
I'm done.
I'm done for like a month, and I'm really stubborn. Last year I played through a lot of it and I quite frankly shouldn't have, but I really like to golf in the summer.
Right, right.
But like, how do you prevent that? And also, you know, what leads to that stuff? Does that mean Colin maybe had something that was just lingering and he finally pushed past it? Or, you know, like, what is it?
Yeah, it's golf and the rotation of the swing is not creating the problem. It's the pattern of what you're doing leading up to that. Typically, most injuries that happen on a golf course actually happen before, whether it be in the gym or wherever. And it's just the tipping point that creates that incongruency of all those regions moving together that then creates a push on the nerve. And once a nerve is hit or your spinal cord is hit with any of the structures we just discussed, it's like a temporary paralyzation. Like, your body goes into a fight or flight. It's trying to protect it from losing control and function of the lower part of your body.
Yeah.
Is essentially what it is.
Yeah.
And so everything locks up and you have pain wherever that nerve goes, whether it be up your spine, across your chest, down your legs, wherever. So what causes it is how he's been training, how he's been leading up to that, how his warm up was that day. There are many factors, you know, but when you look at the biggest thing we see now is overtraining at every level, especially the pros.
As in like too much weight, or just they're training too frequently and not resting enough and like, or like hitting too many balls or doing too much?
All of it.
So, yes.
So yeah. What happens when, you know, you look at Salvatore, for example, he had spinal surgery about a year and a half ago. We discussed him last year. He came back, gained 20 pounds of muscle, right? And now he's injured his spine once or twice more and had another surgery. Well, what happened there? Everyone says you gain muscle, you're going to protect the area. Yes, but if you don't fix what's causing the mechanical problem in a swing and the repetitive nature of it, you're basically making it worse because now you're stacking that area, which is loading it. Think of like pressure in a tire. Like now that pressure, if you blow up that tire, is more and more and more. It's squeezing together like a vise. Well, you bend that over sideways and then turn it. It's amazing he was able to swing at all, adding that load, because he didn't change what's called proprioception, your brain knowing where your joints are in space, your mechanics with that swing with the new mass, and all of a sudden now you have a disaster. And that's how that unpacks, essentially.
Well,
you're seeing this more and more as guys are chasing speed.
Everybody's chasing the speed. And I guess one question I want to ask is, I would say the, you know, call it the top, I don't know, 500 golfers in the world, right? Like you take all the pros, Korn Ferry, Liv, even some of the top like amateurs and golfers. Obviously, everybody's swing is different, but generally you see a lot of similarities, right?
Similar,
like
patterns.
With the similar patterns, similarities in the golf swing. You know, shallowing is always this really big topic. Why does it work for some guys who like have this super, these really long careers and seem to never have injuries? And then you have other guys that, you know, are just career plagued with injuries. Is it more to do with body type and like this, the modern quote unquote modern swing fits certain body types as opposed to others? And we need to take a look at, call it instruction in golf, and start to, you know, change that. And neither of us are instructors, so I'm not,
right.
But I'm just saying in general, like it is interesting to me how some guys really make it work and they just never really have issues. And other guys who could be doing the exact same thing and maybe not even be as long of hitters have all these issues because it just doesn't work the same way with their body.
It's the same in any athlete, right? I mean, physiology is different in everybody. And then you throw into that, are they getting the proper training? Are they doing the right things? You know, you have to own the movement of your swing before you add strength. You add strength and load, and then you don't own that movement. Well, it's just a disaster, and that's what you're seeing over and over and over again. So can everyone generate the same swing speed with even the best technology, best training? Absolutely not. You know, look at John Daly. I don't think he's lifted a weight in his life. Overweight. He's hypermobile. He can move like, you know, spin around five times. And he, how many times has he had a back injury? Not many.
Yeah.
You know, and he's still going. And it's not like he treats his body well, feeding it well with good nutrition, etc. So you look at that, you know, as an extreme. And then you take it and extrapolate that to, you know, you look at guys on the tour now that they're going to the gym before a round, which to me is the worst thing possible.
Really?
Absolutely. You're breaking down muscles before you want to maximize their strength. You want to, before you want to maximize their mobility.
Yeah.
If you go in and you're just doing gentle stretching, you know, first you want to do hip openers, you want to do gentle lunges.
Sure.
Warm up with a walk or something like that.
You're talking about like a full-on 40-minute strength and Brooks Koepka workout where he's bench pressing and stuff like that.
And a lot of them are doing that. Well, what happens is it's going to take you, your body, 2 to 3 days to recover fully to optimize those muscle utilizations. So now you're in a weakened state and you go in try and force a high-speed swing, which most, you know, a lot of people now are going full out, especially younger people, amateurs. On most swings, you know, they're not going 80, 90%. They're going 100, you know, and if you've already fatigued that muscle, you're going to damage the muscle, ligaments, discs, all of it, you know, and that's when it then happens, you know, on the course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you transition into my next kind of topics, which were, what is the proper way to warm up, right? Because, you know, I think a lot of people would hear that and say, well, like I've had some of my best rounds where I wouldn't say full workout, but like I warm the body up, right? Like I get it going, I get the blood flowing, and then like I step up to the first tee and like I just feel ready to play golf. Then there's some people I can just, I don't know, roll out of the trunk and all of a sudden they're good to go. I don't know how people do that, but
that's genetics.
Yeah. What are the, you know, things that you can do to warm up? And then I also want to talk about, you know, you've helped me a little bit with some of the just really small things that you can do in a swing to, you know, help out with some of the mobility things. Like I've been kind of flaring my, you know, left foot. I'm a right-handed golfer.
Right.
My lead foot, flaring that a little bit so that my hips can like open and it doesn't put as much strain on like my knees and just little things like that. What are some, you know, what's some free advice to the listeners out there on how to warm up and, you know, put a little less strain on their back?
Yeah, absolutely. The research shows, like you said, okay, just gentle warm up, you know, walking, you know, get the blood flowing 3 to 4 minutes, nothing crazy. Do, you know, 30 seconds to a minute of gentle lunges across the parking lot as you're walking to go pay for your cart. After that, you do some gentle hip openers, you know, just little hip openers as you walk to the range. Then you start with half swings with your wedges. You know, you move up, you maybe do 5 to 8 to 10. Then you move up to some, you know, higher irons, then mid irons, and then increase your swing speed to that. No more than maybe 15 to 20 balls, ending with a few drivers. So that's the number one way to do it, because we typically aren't going to the course 3 hours before, like you see the pros, and going through a whole routine.
Yeah.
And the number one thing too, as you know too, when you're on the range, you got to take your time between rapid firing it.
Yeah.
You know, take a few minutes between every ball, do a little stretching, nothing crazy, because you don't want to overstretch muscles. When you look at muscle fibers, if you overstretch them, you're losing the contractibility of them when you need them the most when you're playing. And that's where things have really changed in exercise. You look at sprinters, for example, they used to stretch significantly before a race. Now they don't stretch at all.
Really?
Right. They warm up a little bit, but because if you stretch those cross bridges, it's called actin and myosin fibers. If you stretch them past their physiological range and then try and contract them, you're going to be significantly slower because you can't regain that in that short period of time.
Randy Moss was on to something. 84 don't stretch.
That's right.
Yeah, he was on to something.
It's a proven thing. You know, so you want to gently mobilize so that you get the primary thing is the hip and pelvis. Get that gently mobilized through motion. Then get your swing moving and your spine moving. You want to stretch your thoracic spine, which is our mid back, just with gentle rotations. That's where most of our rotation's coming from in our spine is our mid back. And then you transition to a light range workout and then have the first tee. Or, in addition, focus a lot on chipping and putting, where most of our scoring comes from, that most people neglect, right?
Probably do that.
It's pretty hard to screw your back up putting, but I mean, people do it, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was going to say, I want to understand, I don't know if I'm onto something, so this could be a really stupid question, but I've heard a lot of guys, and myself included, you know, pre-round, I've got a roller in my locker, and I'll like roll my legs out because I feel tight, but I don't feel like I'm stretching. I feel like I'm releasing tension. Like I usually carry a lot of tension in my like quads and hamstrings.
Right.
Is there a difference between releasing tension and stretching? And is that a dumb question?
It's not a dumb question. What you're doing with the rolling is you could be decreasing the effectiveness of your muscles by doing that. I wouldn't do it right before a round. I would not. I would do some gentle, like we discussed, just hip openers, gentle lunges. Get warm, intrinsically warm. Walk on a treadmill for 5 to 8 minutes, something like that. But I wouldn't do that after. That's more of a recovery or next day thing to do. But not before a round. Because you are bringing those muscle fibers beyond the range of what you want them to do to perform is the easiest scientific way for me to kind of describe it. But that's a proven thing, not right in the morning. You know, maybe 3 hours before, it has a chance to recover, but not right before.
Yeah, so really it's about warming your body up and doing it in a, call it light way that you're getting ready to do some of all the similar movements, get the blood flowing a little bit, but you never want to overstretch or overexert and fatigue your muscles.
Correct.
That's in any fashion. Good summation of it.
Yep, exactly. Especially if you're walking, you know, because you need that for the walk, right?
But yeah.
It's a proven thing to do that and minimize that as long as you feel comfortable.
Sure.
You know,
I do want to ask about you all specifically, and I've seen tons of great chiropractors over the years. I mean, I've been getting chiropractic work done since probably right after college when I started working out more, and it's always been really, really good on my body. But I am curious, you all have done some things that I haven't seen at other chiropractors, and everybody's got their own kind of, you know, theories and things that work. And, I noticed when I started seeing you all, you use the little like heat things that you put on the
stimulation.
Yeah. Low volt stimulation, simulating of the muscles. And I love those things, by the way. I do just want to understand a little bit and have you talk about kind of the way that you all practice and, you know, I guess maybe your theory and why it works. Cause everybody does chiropractic work a little bit different. And I found great success in seeing you all. And so, it would be good to understand your process and the why behind it. And then we can talk a little bit about how, you know, we kind of changed my back for the better. And I always tell people to come and see you all cause
I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's been awesome.
So the way I look at it is really nuts and bolts. I feel and see what your body looks like statically laying down, right? Then I take a picture and visualize where those segments are in space at that point in time. And then I use that as my visual on how I'm going to change your spine so it's working in unison, those mechanical movements. And then as I slowly go along that corrective process like we did with you, you want to take the muscles out of it initially so you can get those joints working so there isn't anything slowing that progress of movement. That's what we use the stim for. Fatigues the muscles. We gain more movement as a result of doing that.
Because otherwise your muscles are going to, they're going to try and protect something that's maybe not in the right spot or feels like is vulnerable.
Correct. They're going to keep it in that memory where it's been for a long time.
Got it.
Because we're changing patterns of movement. essentially is what we're doing. And that comes not just locally, but also the connection that your brain has to those patterns of movement.
Sure.
And so by stimulating that area, it releases actually what are called endorphins and Keflins, which are natural in our body to create basically a pain relieving aspect to the zone where we put them. But it also is tendinizing the muscles or fatiguing those local muscles where we're going to work or correct your spine. And then it stays there for a longer period of time because it takes time for your body then to recover and come back to its normal tone.
Yeah.
That's why if you're going to golf, I typically say that day and I'm going to adjust you. I won't put the stim on for very long at all, you know, because I don't want to overly fatigue those muscles. I sure. want them still to have good tone when you go out and play. So that's essentially what I'm doing. And what I do is really based upon science and what works with athletes and works with everybody, athlete, non-athlete, and being specific with what you do, specific with the science behind chiropractic and how the body's physiology works. Everyone's spine is a fingerprint. So I need to see what that looks like before I start working on it. Everyone's is completely different. How those joints come together, how they move, how they're positioned, and then what you've done through the years to either get it better or screw it up. And then you put that together with the golf swing, it becomes a complex equation on making that work properly, and it takes time. Like it's taken you a year and a half, 2 years to finally you're like, okay, now I'm going into this season, I feel good. And yeah. you're not afraid that you're going to drop down on the third tee, you know, which yeah. is good,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Because you'll still get little tweaks, so to speak, but you know it's not going to be disastrous.
Yeah. And I can usually, I'm very in tune with it now. I usually right. come in and I can like explain to you exactly what it is and also how it happened. Where before I'd be like, I don't know, Mark, I woke up today and I could barely move. Right. I have no idea what happened. I rolled weird overnight or something. I don't know. It's yeah. It's been it truly is like life changing. I mean, Larry said the same thing. Like when you have chronic pain, like whatever it is, whether it's in your back or you got something else going on, and then like one day you come to the realization that it's gone, you just go, "Holy cow!" Like,
right. It's amazing.
It really is.
Especially when you can do what you love the most at a higher level and not worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the goal. Okay. Like. I mean, I know we all want to go on tour, but it's really playing golf for your life and keeping your body functional to do it at the best ability you can.
Yeah.
And that's what you look at, and that's what I do to help that happen, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've done it with me. You've done it with Larry. It sounds like we need to get Rocco back here.
We should. Yeah. He'll be back the end of May. I just heard from him. So
yeah.
Coming back.
Is he coming back to see you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He needs some help.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. How's he been playing? I haven't followed.
Not great. He withdrew from the last two tournaments, I think. And I don't know the exact reason, but
yeah,
health-wise, for sure.
Really? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, hopefully,
we'll get him hopefully back
he gets
on track.
Back on the right track. Yeah. It's always great having you here. I appreciate it. I think now my cadence, I come in about every 2 weeks. I try to come in earlier in the week so that I don't play because I play later in the week.
Exactly.
And I try and send everybody your way, man. You've done great work with not only me, but all the people that have sent me to you and Larry and, people can find you just Excelsior Chiropractic.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Pretty simple.
It's a blessing. I enjoy working with people and
the team's great too. Like I shout out Mitch and Mallory. I mean, amazing. Everybody,
they make me look good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. And we're all on the same page and we team treat everybody, which is amazing. We discuss cases on everyone's situation, their unique situation or challenge they're having, and how we can work together and who's better fit to help that person.
Yeah
it's pretty cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah,
it is how it should be. You've done a great job, and I appreciate you coming on and educating the audience, and appreciate you getting me back out there. Now we gotta go have a fun golf season.
That's what
it's all about. Yeah, we gotta go play.
Yeah, I'd love to.
My last question, I didn't prep you for this whatsoever. Are we going to get Austin Matthews here in Minnesota? You're Toronto guy, right? You're Maple Leafs.
Big Toronto guy.
What are the Toronto Maple Leafs fans thinking about it? And then do you think you're going to be coming to watch him here in the?
Well, the Wild general manager has been, you know, really
hot to trot on him
to come here. I see it as a strong possibility.
Do you think he wants out of Toronto?
I think so.
Think so. Time has just come. It's one of those.
Noel, Toronto's the toughest place for hockey players to play.
Yeah.
The fans are horrible.
It's like playing in New York or Boston, right?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, they love you when you're high and they hate you when you're low, and there's no forgiveness.
Just ask our local boy, Jake Gardner, about that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I think it's a strong possibility that they've got to break down that whole organization. You know, last year they were a step away from the Stanley Cup Finals, lost to Florida, and then they broke down the whole team and went heavy because they realized, you know, regular season hockey is quite a bit different than playoff hockey.
Yeah.
Well, when you end up third last in the league because you went heavy, that doesn't really do you any good. So they went heavy and slow, and that was their problem this year.
Well, they built to try and beat, I would imagine,
Florida,
and then Florida misses the playoffs. Right. Toronto misses the playoffs, and you go, what are we doing?
So now they fired everyone in their front office, basically, and they're starting from scratch. So it's going to be a long battle, which I've been used to. I mean, I've never seen them win the cup. They haven't won it since 67, so the drought will continue. But I think they will unload Matthews if they can for some...
So he's got one more year left?
I think so.
But I think that sounds right. I think it's somebody who had to trade for him. I don't believe he's a free agent.
No,
I think he's got one more year, so it'd be a trade, and they think he's going to walk. They're going to try and get a haul for him.
Right, but I think something happened to him 2.5 years ago, body-wise, and he hasn't been the same since. You know,
yeah, he's taken a little decline, but he's still Austin Matthews.
Yeah, and it would be awesome to have him here. He just doesn't seem happy there, and... You know, he's taken quite a bit of heat in the Toronto media, I know for sure. But
we could use a first-line center.
That's right. We've never had one here in Minnesota.
No.
In 25 years. But, you know, you look what happened to Marner, Toronto boy, and he was pushed out of Toronto. I mean,
that's true. He was, wasn't he? I didn't know he was a Toronto kid. Oh, yeah. He grew up there?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And he talks about the abuse he took there, and it was pretty awful. And he's very open about it.
That's too bad.
And they got nothing for him, essentially, you know?
Yeah, because he was just...
He was going to walk anyway, so they got some, you know, I don't know, fifth-round draft pick or something like that.
Well, maybe after we win the Cup this year, he'll for sure want to come here. We'll see.
That's right. Big game tonight.
Big game tonight. Yeah, so this will go live next Thursday, so what's your prediction, Minnesota down? You got to be rooting for the Wild.
Dude, I'm a Wild fan through and through. I was waiting there the night before tickets went for sale and camped on the pavement.
Really? You
know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a diehard fan. And I've got a patient on the Wild, so I'm very excited because if they win the Cup, it's coming to Excelsior.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be awesome. I think they got to win tonight.
Yeah.
Just for psyche-wise.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to lose and then have to win two in a row. I agree. I think Zuccarello's back tonight, too.
That's the key. I didn't realize what a cog he was to the
power play. Holy cow.
Power play's been abysmal without him there.
Yeah.
They can't move the puck around. If someone can take out Ben, that would be fantastic because that guy's just playing like a goon and that does not belong in hockey right now. I love toughness, but not the crap they're pulling.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It'll be a good one, and I can actually stay up and watch the whole game because
it starts at 7 tonight. That'll be great. Yeah, so. Hopefully when this airs next week, we'll be saying the Wild won tonight. And they won Saturday in Minnesota, wild and six, and they're going to go take on Colorado.
And their lucky prize is Colorado's been sitting for a week, and they get to take them on. So Colorado's beatable, though.
I think they are, too. Yeah. I think their goaltending's a little weary, and their power play hasn't been very good either. And, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's a good time of year, for sure.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right, Mark, I appreciate it, man. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.